Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Proverbs 18:24. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Proverbs 27. Verses 5 and 6. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. And then down to verses 9 and 10. Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. Do not forsake your friend and your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Nathaniel. If you're a first-time guest with us, your first Sunday, I too want to welcome you, and hopefully you have felt some warmth and some friendship from others already. Something you should know about our church, if you are visiting, is that we want to be a praying, generous, sending, going kind of church. Like, we want to give, we think that we're at our best when we're giving ourselves away, when we're serving others, and when we're taking the gospel to those who have not yet met Christ. And so we've got two back-to-back weeks, and we look forward to a report, a Puerto Rico report next Sunday as well, just coming back. So it's been super life-giving to everybody on the team. Ask somebody about the trip. Ask people about whether they went to Marseille or Puerto Rico, how things went. We'd love to tell you. We are wrapping up Proverbs, just a few more weeks in Proverbs, and then we make our shift to the Psalms for this summer. Friendship is what we want to think about today, and the importance of wisdom in relationships. So wisdom, quick definition for wisdom. If you haven't been with us, we've been saying this kind of out throughout the series. Wisdom is the art and craft of living by God's design. God made the world. He knows how to live in it. And when we live wisely, we live in accordance with his design. That's what wisdom is. And in the Bible, wisdom is certainly not less than being moral and good, but it's more than that, right? It's knowing the right thing to do in a thousand situations that the rule book just doesn't apply, just doesn't explicitly state. Most of your daily decisions are not found in a verse of Scripture. What do I do here? What do I do there? And so, which of these options, several of them might be morally permissible. I got a lot of options in front of me. What's the best option, and for who is it good? So wisdom is the ability to know the right thing to do in all of those situations where the moral rules don't directly or specifically address things. And nowhere is that more necessary than in relationships. Like, wisdom is how you navigate the river of relationships that's got big rocks in it and shallows and trees sticking out in the like, what do I do in this relationship? What do I do in this moment? Wisdom is how you learn to navigate healthy relationships. So Proverbs, consequently, talks a lot about relationships, family life, neighbors, and friends. And so we're going to talk specifically about friendship today. About 3 weeks ago, On May 19th, Tim Keller, who is widely known pastor, theologian, author, he went to be with Jesus. And what a gift to the church he was. I love listening to Keller, reading Keller. His sermon on friendship has definitely influenced what I'm doing here today. So I'm adapting that. I want to honor him by saying that. His sermon, you should go listen to it. It's free. You should go listen to his sermon. It's got 4 points. I'm just going to give you three. I'm giving you a discount. But you'll enjoy it. But I've really been influenced by his teaching, and the church is better for it, you know, the church at large. We're so thankful for his ministry. If you open up Proverbs and you just start studying what does Proverbs teach about friendship, you will discover that you'll never be a wise person until you learn how to choose and make and keep good friends. There are three things we want to walk through this morning. The uniqueness of friendship, the forging of and shaping of friendship, and then third, the gift of friendship. So let's walk through those together. Number one, the uniqueness of friendship. Verse 17 of chapter 17. Look at this again with me. It's on page 540 in the Pew Bible. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A friend loves at all times. There are times when a friend is better than a sibling. I think that's what Proverbs 17 is describing for us here. There are times when a friend is better and more needed and more life-giving than a sibling. Now, when you realize that this proverb was written to a culture that highly values, more so than we do, family relationships, this is a strong statement about the value of friendship. Verse 17 is saying, a brother is born forever. Of course your brother is going to be there for you because blood is thick. And in a crisis, your family is going to be there for you. There's even this sort of biological compulsion, right? There's this built-in, inherent brother or sister, I'm going to be there for you in crisis. Family loyalty, it runs deep. But they may not be the ones that you want to watch the game with or go hiking with or hit the outlet malls, you know. A friend is different than a family member. A friend is there, here's the difference. A friend is there because she chooses to be there. A friend is there because he wants to be there, right? Someone who chose you, who freely chose you, who had no obligation to choose you as his friend or her friend. So friendship brings something into your life that family can't bring, that romance can't bring, that neighbors can't bring, that a colleague at work can't bring. This is so important because though it is possible to exist without friendship. You can live. You can get by without friendship, but you shouldn't. You won't flourish without it. You really won't flourish. C.S. Lewis introduced us to this concept in The Four Loves in his chapter on friendship, and he describes it as the least instinctive of the loves. Meaning, romantic love is very instinctive, and there's this biological pull, and in fact, none of us would be here today if it weren't for that. And family love is very real, and it's something that you should grow up learning. You should grow up learning how to live in a family. It will define and redefine your understanding of love. Those loves are very real, but friendship is different. It's, Lewis called it, the most unencumbered affection. The truly chosen love, where you freely give your time and your energy and your devotion to another person just because you want to. When I was 13 or 14 years old, growing up in Tampa, Florida, we rode our bikes everywhere. I can remember an afternoon just constantly sticking my head out of the garage, looking around the corner, seeing if my friend was here yet on his bike. When's he going to get here? It took forever. Have you ever been waiting for a friend to show up and you're just like, why is taking so long? Why is that the case? Because it's a different kind of love. It's the reason you stay up late at slumber parties. And you want time to stand still. When you're with that person, you just wish that things could, the hourglass could just slow down. Because friendship is like that. You freely give your time and energy and devotion to another person. And on the receiving end of it, it's where you feel the most trust, the most understood, the most relational, like shalom and rest and peace. It's just energizing. Nothing is as energizing as true friendship at the relational level. Look over to Proverbs 18, just one page over, 18:24. 18:24 says this: a man of many companions may come to ruin, but not someone who has a friend. There's a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Notice this contrast, right? There are many companions. There's a friend. There are many who associate with you. There is a friend. A true friend is a rare commodity. You might have 350 contacts in your phone. You do not have 350 friends. Not by this definition. True friendship is rare, and you can't force it. You can't, like that is definitely something to know about friendship. You just can't force it. Ralph Waldo Emerson said it this way: friendship does not ask, do you love me? It doesn't demand, do you love me? So much as, do you see the same thing? Are you passionate about this truth? And that's how friendships are born, often. Bluegrass music, Marvel Universe, cooking shows, Jane Austen novels. What is it? Like, what is it that you and your friend discovered together? Or even better, a love for the gospel. Or orphans in Puerto Rico. A love for something outside of yourself. That's how a friendship starts. And a good friendship is fueled by the truth and beauty of whatever that shared thing is, more so than trying to possess one another in relationship. In fact, this is why people who simply want friends and have to and are trying to make friends for the sake of having friends and keeping friends, it's like it's so hard for them. This is why it's hard. Because the neediness for friendship, you start to feel that, and you feel the pressure of that. You feel somebody trying to kind of clamp down on you and possess you, and the friendship sort of disappears. Why does the friendship disappear? Because that possessiveness is not the nature of friendship. Maybe you felt that. Maybe you were trying too hard to be a friend to someone. Or someone wanted to befriend you, and they were trying too hard, and you could feel it. Friendship is a unique thing, and it is really discovered and realized more than manufactured. So that's the uniqueness of it. Now, if that's the case, once it is discovered, what do you do with it? How do you manage it? How do you keep it? How do you shape it? How do you form it into something more beautiful and lasting? Let me give you four thoughts. And again, I'm following Keller here. I've tweaked some things here and there, throwing a little bit of salsa of my own. Forging friendship. Let me give you four things: constancy, vulnerability, honesty, and counsel. First, constancy. Look at 17:17 again. Back to Proverbs 17 and verse 17. A friend loves most of the time. What? Help me here. Look at the text. What does it say? A friend loves all at all times. Now, this clearly does not mean you're with each other all the time. That's not the mark of true friendship, that you're with each other all the time. In fact, there's another proverb that says, be careful you don't wear out your welcome at your neighbor's house, right? Don't overcook this. He doesn't mean you're with each other all the time. What does he mean? He means at all kinds of times, in difficult times, in good times, in bad times, in crisis times. A friend loves at all times, at terribly inconvenient times. This week, my phone rang, and please tell me I'm not the only person who's done this. You look at it and you decide whether or not you're going to answer it. Can I get a witness? Okay, come on, let's be real here. You want to be in a real place, right? And it happened to me this week, and it just was not a good time. But I had to answer it. And people know whether or not you are a reliable friend in terms of constancy. It's a mark of relational maturity to realize that your companions are not the same thing as your true friends, and it's okay that there is a difference, right? It's very much okay that you have many companions, but only a few true friends. That's okay. You should be okay with that. They should be okay with that. A companion, in the midst of crisis, a companion says, call me if you need me. And he means it. She means it. A friend just shows up and has the freedom and relationship to do that. And it's received. True friendship is different than companionship. If you want that kind of friend, you will have to be that kind of friend. And negotiating friendship is really important. Secondly, vulnerability. I think, and I'll talk to the guys for just a second. If you're a dude, can I just have your attention for a minute? I think this is harder for guys. As a general rule, I understand that it's not the case for everybody. But as a general rule, I think it's harder for guys to do this. Look at Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 5. And you see, we talked about this a few weeks ago. The purpose in a man's heart is like a deep well. It's like deep water, not like an ocean, but like a well. And a man of understanding will draw it up out, right? I think it's hard for men to let, it's hard for us to let people close to the well, lean over the well, drop the bucket down into the well, find some nastiness, pull that up, and see where that goes. Guys don't like to do that, as a general rule. Unless they've learned through gospel talk and gospel relationships and gospel life to do that, we tend to resist that. A friend, though, look, here's why you need close men, friendships in your life, guys. Like, vulnerability is real. It's needed. And if you never let anybody up to the well or down in, let them draw the bucket of understanding, like what's going on in your heart, you're not going to have true lasting friendships. It's going to be about the news and the scores and the latest tech, and that's where it stops. But you need more than that. A friend is someone who knows the dark depths of your heart and loves you anyway and is willing to sit quietly and draw the bucket up slowly. And yet if you stay closed off and you remain guarded, you never let that happen, your deepest fears and your deepest angers and your shame and your depression and some of the stuff that you've learned how to fake it, right? Some of you guys really are like, man, fake it till you make it. Like, you really live that way. Stop. You don't need to live that way. It's not gonna finish well. Vulnerability is such a crucial element of friendship. This is true for men and women. I just want to go after the guys for a minute because I think we struggle with true friendship at that level and in terms of vulnerability and understanding and dependence. Like, man, I don't need anybody's help with this. I can figure it out. No, you can't. All right, number three. If you add constancy and vulnerability together, you come to this third element, and that is honesty. And here's how the forging works. If you show me these other things, constancy and vulnerability, both a give and take in that vulnerability, then you get permission to speak redemptively into my life. You get to be brutally honest with me, right? So verses 5 and 6, chapter 27, verses 5 and 6. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, verse 6. Better is open rebuke than a hidden love. There's a kind of love that is self-deceived. It thinks it's love, but it's not real love. Better is an open rebuke than a hidden apparent love, right? Faithful are the wounds of a friend, the next line says. Really, Proverbs don't always do this. They don't, because of the way the proverb is written, they don't always explain each other, but these two do. 5 and 6 go together very nicely, and they explain each other. And so verse 6 is really important. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Oh, many are the kisses of an enemy. You expect enemies to be deceptive with a greeting, but faithful are the wounds of a friend. If your friends are not willing to disagree with you, correct you, check you, they're not really friends. They're not that far in. It sometimes hurts to have a hard conversation, verse 6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend means it hurts to have a hard conversation. One of our sons would fall a good bit when he was younger, and he would skin up his knees all the time. And I remember one particular time, I thought I had gotten everything out and cleaned the wound and all that. But over the next few hours or day, whatever it was, we realized there's still some tiny pieces of asphalt in that skinned knee. And I gotta go back in. And so I said, Vicky, please go do this. No, she would not even look at it. Okay, so no, you got to do this. Okay, so maybe I should just say to him, I love him too much to do that. I don't want to hurt him again. Would you say that's loving? No, you would say, take care of this so that he can heal, right? And it hurts. And so you have to create a little bit of a wound, right? And to get this thing cleaned out. And then he's able to walk again and run again and jump again. And like, this is what friendship is supposed to be about. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. And you know whether or not you still have a friend because they stick around after the wound. They stick around for the healing. And it's beautiful. It's hard, but it's good. And then here's the fourth way to forge friendship. Counsel. And this is good, and it feels good. This is not the hard stuff of faithful wounds. This is the good stuff, 27:9 across the board. Oil and perfume make the heart glad. So in a dry and arid climate, you would use oil to just feel good again, right? Your face is chapped, your skin is chapped, your lips are chapped, and you would feel the relief of putting some oil on your forehead, down, you know, run down cheeks, your lips, your face. You're like, oh, that's so satisfying. Oil and perfume, they bring gladness to your heart and your body. And the sweetness, here's how the proverb works. Look at verse 9. And the sweetness of a friend, the healing, the goodness, the blessing is in his earnest counsel. Now, Earnest here conveys a sense of sincerity, like when this person is speaking to you, oh, sure, you have fun together. There are times when you have fun together, you laugh together, but there's a sincerity about his counsel because he's interested in you. He's sincerely interested. She is sincerely trusting of you. She has your best interest in mind. And when she brings that counsel to you, it feels right. It feels good. It's satisfying. When your friend brings that kind of counsel to you, you know it's good. You know it's right. This is another reason why you should not try to do life alone. There is wisdom in a multitude of counselors. There's also wisdom in friendship that includes good counsel. That's what's going on here. So, here's the argument so far. Friendship is unique among the loves. It's a unique thing. It's different than married love. It's different than family love. It's different than neighbor love. Secondly, once you discover that friendship, you should work to keep it, forge it, strengthen it into something beautiful through constancy, vulnerability, honesty, and counsel. Now, you got to be asking yourself at this point, okay, where does it even come from to begin with? At least I'm asking that. Where does friendship come from? Because it's a thing. You see it. In fact, you don't have to be a Christian. People of all faiths have tapped into what we would call a common grace in friendship. Friendship is a thing. It's a reality. Where does it come from? Third point, and we'll bring things in for a landing. It's a gift. Friendship, like every other good and perfect gift, comes down from the Father of lights, right? In whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. It's a gift from God. Friendship is a gift from God. It is a beautiful gift from the Creator who knows what we need to live well. Like, stop saying you don't need friendship. We need friendship because God has given it to it. In fact, the kind of love that defines friends could only come from the God who chose us before we chose Him. Friendship is a gift. And in every human friendship, I think there is a reverberation, an echo of the gift of God choosing in salvation. It's a beautiful thought. And so, C.S. Lewis, in his really helpful book on the four loves, described it so well. Listen to how Lewis describes this. The friendship that you have with someone, true friendship, it's not a reward for our discrimination and good taste in finding each other out, like in discovering each other. Friendship is not the reward of two brilliant people who searched each other out. That's what he's saying. In reality, a few years difference in the dates of our births, a few more miles between certain houses, the choice of one university instead of another, the posting to a different regiment, the accident of a topic being raised or not raised at a first meeting, any of these chances could have kept us apart. But for a Christian, there are, strictly speaking, no chances. A secret master of ceremonies has been at work. Christ, who said to the disciples, "You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you," can truly say to every group of Christian friends, "You have not chosen one another, I have chosen you for each other." Man, hear the gospel in that. Because I do think sometimes in our worldly expression of friendship, it just turns into this sort of mutual admiration society. Oh, you're amazing. No, you're amazing. No, you're amazing. No, you're amazing. That's not friendship. So, the night before Jesus died, he said to his disciples, John chapter 15, turn there for me. Look at this. I want you to see this. This is so good. The night before Jesus died, he says in John chapter 15, verse 12, Verse 13, let's go to verse 13. Greater love has no one than this, than that he lay down his life for his friends, that he give himself away. You are my friends. Verse 14. No longer do I call you servants, but I now call you friends. When Jesus said this, listen, when Jesus said this, suddenly the whole history of salvation is understood in terms of friendship. This is amazing. Jesus is saying, I am the ultimate friend. I am the friend who sticks closer to than a brother. I am the friend who loves at all times. You might deny me, but I will remain faithful to you. I will bleed my veins dry for you. Jesus is the friend of sinners. Like, I love that song. Jesus is the friend of sinners. So if friendship is about being amazed by something outside of us that's bigger than us, that we share a passion and vision for, and doesn't just ask, do you love me? If friendship is something like that, then how do we, like, what is it that we share with Jesus in friendship? Well, it's the rescue. It's the rescue. It's the redeeming sinners out of a tiny, unhappy, claustrophobic world of self. Jesus is the friend of sinners, not because he feels bad for them, right? But he's the friend of sinners because it's the only way out. And when you reciprocate the friendship of God that has been sent toward you in Christ, then you're saying, I want out. I want rescue. I want redemption. I want to embrace God stepping toward me, right? So share a vision with God to discover a new life in the gospel. No longer enemies. Now friends, reconciled. Beautiful gift of salvation and friendship. So we come to the Lord's table today. We want, when we come, as you prepare your heart for communion, there is a very real sense in which God has stepped toward you in friendship through Jesus Christ. Is God holy and transcendent and huge and unapproachable and other than you? Yes, absolutely. That's what makes the beauty of God befriending sinners so absolutely mind-blowing. So come to the table and discover again that Jesus is the friend of sinners.